Welcome to the Akashic Reading Podcast, presented by AkashicReading.com, the place where you can learn to access your soul's wisdom, or at least stop digging the hole any deeper. I'm your host, Terry Uktena, and today we'll be discussing why it's not your heart chakra which needs to expand, but your second chakra, which needs to become strong in order to healthily manifest and interconnect with a partner. Within the human energy system, there are three major nodes which form the connection center. When speaking in terms of chakras, these are the heart chakra, or chakra 4, the core, or chakra 3, and the center of intimacy and money, chakra 2. In the Kabbalah's Tree of Life, these are the Sephirot Da'at, Tiferet, and Yesod. Tiferet, or chakra 3, is our central core. It's the merging point for all aspects of ourselves, where our spiritual nature enters linear time, where the practical world merges with the timeless, and where we can both be in our bodies experiencing each moment while simultaneously experiencing our eternal selves. On either side of this nexus point are the ways in which we connect with people and the outside world. Our heart center, or Da'at, is where we love people unconditionally. It's how we see the soul of a person underneath the masks, roles, or lessons they're experiencing in this embodiment. It's where we carry the knowledge we're all the same and all precious regardless of the bodies we choose to inhabit. This is the place where we connect at a universal level. In this part of ourselves resides a love which has no needs, no desires, but instead is nurturing because it is felt. Through this center, we have the means to connect with others which we term selfless, which we think of as being higher or above the sordidness of life. It's the type of connection which treats everyone equally, but therefore cannot treat anyone uniquely. Heart center connection, by its very nature, is unable to be practical. We see this in the national and international struggles to respond when tragedy strikes. We feel, sometimes deeply, when tragedy occurs. We take action to communicate our connection to what has happened through various means, including vigils, social media, donations, gift cards, emails, petitions, and so on. However, something stops most people from taking a next step. We bemoan the fact so few people get involved to make change, that many words are said but few actions taken, that nothing ever seems to change, but the connection we make in our heart center is not a practical embodied connect. We can choose to transform it to this type of connecting, and there are those who do. The medical professionals and others who choose to work with Doctors Without Borders transform this connection into action. So too did those who traveled across the country to help rebuild after Hurricane Sandy and Katrina. These moments are notable because they're rare. Our heart-centered connection is meant to radiate out, to intertwine with others, and to be encompassing as well, to inform our actions, but on the human, soul, and universal level. Where we struggle most is with intimate connection, which resides in the Sephirot Yesod, or the second chakra, the place of intimate partnership and money. This is where we transform Akasha into embodied connection, moving our core self into relationship with others. Here, our connections are deeply personal, rooted in the uniqueness of each situation, and demonstrative of how we value ourselves as well as others. Money, abundance, and finance is the language by which we value things. Money has no intrinsic value, but like words, only the meaning we give it, and very often changing in context, like an iridescent sheen. Personal relationships are the way we value others and the way in which we demonstrate both how we wish to be valued and how we value ourselves. This is why friendships, family, and partners can be seen as mirrors holding up a reflection for us. There are times when we attract or choose people who will be this reflection in order for us to learn how to manifest ourselves fully into being in embodied life. There are relationships we craft through choice or over time to be the reflection. Yet this is only one aspect of embodied connection. Second chakra is where we take a step forward out of ourselves, reaching out with our true and essential nature to connect with someone else. It's one of the most unique of experiences which is only afforded in embodied life, to be purely and unadulteratedly ourselves, not merged with any other, and yet connected, allowing access to our essential self and gaining access to theirs. The amount of access varies from relationship to relationship, even moment to moment, as relationships mature, adjust, come into being, and fall out again. Often what we focus on when thinking about or being in a relationship is how we feel and the way in which we or they are expressing needs. However, while communication problems are common enough in relationships to spawn entire self-help sections and the need for couples counselors, it can be a symptom of a much deeper issue. Many relationships suffer due to how we are relating first to ourselves and therefore to our significant other. It can be helpful to think of this in terms of scales. Tipped one way, we're unable to see beyond the moment and our need. Tipped the other, we're unable to move beyond their needs. All the while, the scales are meant not to hold still and completely equal, but to gently rock back and forth in order to create the equilibrium of equal partnership. Some people struggle to learn lessons, heal, or deal with issues via relationships. This is normal and very human, which doesn't make it any less difficult, painful, or disheartening. In fact, it's common enough we recognize when someone has quote-unquote married their mother or are in relationship with a guy because of their quote-unquote daddy issues. We try to work through what is most intimate to us emotionally through relationships where, unlike in our family of origin, we have the ability to act in our best interest and the freedom to do so. Because we can walk away from a relationship of our choosing, we can feel free and even empowered to open ourselves up. We have the opportunity to work through things, make different choices, change the ending, get what we need and speak our truth. We can get what we've always needed and repair the damage done. At least that's the theory. The difficulty comes from the fact this is a relationship and not a one-man play being acted out on a stage with only one person's perspective being represented. Someone learning lessons or working to heal is rarely able to hold space for another person or fully participate in being a healthy partner. Their focus is on their pain, their issues, and their needs. This isn't to say they're selfish, but if you have pain somewhere, it's difficult to think about anything else or focus beyond the need to make the pain go away. So when a person in this situation opens themselves up to relationship, it's with their thumb on the scales in their favor. They may fervently desire and even ask for an intimate partner, their perfect match who will solve all their problems and create their happily ever after. However, the criteria they're using is weighted towards someone who will help them fix their problems. They're looking for someone who will fill the voids, give them something they've never had before, resolve old hurts, and so on. This makes the relationship search task-oriented rather than person-oriented. They're looking for a bandage rather than a partner, a means to an end. In this search, with things weighted towards problem solving and the focus on the task, what gets missed is the fact the person is not only a solution, but also a complex human being. In most cases, the factors which make them a good fit as a bandage are only a fraction of everything which is contained in their identity, and often these aren't even the most relevant concerning being with them. Of course, at the beginning of a relationship, each person is not only putting the best version of themselves out there, but they're picking up the cues as to what their lover likes, how they talk, and what is most relevant to making them happy in the moment, so each tends to say, do, and be those things. All of which aids in the romance, helping each person through the frightening experience of taking down barriers and being vulnerable to another person. It's after this, after the romance begins to wane, the oxytocin wears off and each person starts to act like their normal selves again, that the truth becomes achingly clear. For their lover begins to do the same. They discover the lover is not who they thought them to be. The rest of their lover's core self begins to emerge and often is as wounded, needy, and desiring a bandaging as their own. This can cause the world to seem as if it's been flipped upside down. Where they thought they would be loved, cared for, and have the life they've always wanted, instead they end up being the help, support, and even servant of their significant other who has issues which need healing. While some people in the spiritual community teach a remedy to this, which is to heal all the hurts within you before seeking a partner, this sets a goal which is impossible to attain. As human beings are always in progress, always changing and seeking towards becoming, it's unfair to ask that someone be completely healed before they can seek love from someone else. In fact, it's cruel. As I mentioned, sometimes people are going through these types of relationships in order to heal or to learn lessons. However, once the lesson is learned or the message received, the key to moving beyond this cycle is not to seek full healing. but instead to begin cultivating healthy relationship skills. The first step towards doing so is looking at the list of things desired in a partner and sort out what is actually about relating from what is there to bandage something unhealed. For example, wanting a partner to have a similar interest in something you like, such as motorcycles or triathlons or even antiques, is relational. Needing them to be trustworthy is bandaging a wound. Trustworthiness in and of itself is a virtue. However, the need to specify this as a primary requirement rather than recognize it as already included in a healthy relationship points to how it's being used as a bandage. Sometimes, in order to cultivate healthy relationship skills, it can be handy to approach the issue from the side rather than straight on. Instead of trying to figure out what you're doing which isn't working, stop doing this and institute some other behavior, all of which is exhausting just to contemplate, you can instead act on the things you want from a partner. You can become your own best significant other, as it were. Give yourself the treats, the attention, and the approval you'd like to have from someone else. Take yourself out on special occasions. Make a point to put yourself first at least one night a week. It can seem silly, but if you're taking care of those needs, then you won't need to look at the other person as a remedy for them. You'll see the other person more clearly and will have already shown them how you wish to be treated. It's a twofer. Some people struggle with their thumb on the other side of the scale. When looking for a partner, even though they feel good about themselves, competent in their lives, and in fact are often helping others in a variety of ways each day, even though they ask for someone who would be a perfect partner for them, what they get is someone who needs them. Oh, they see the person clearly, but this is in part the problem. Whether due to a kind heart, being an empath, having always been a problem solver or fixer, or being a healer of some kind, they can see the need, the brokenness, the beauty, and worthiness of the other and feel drawn to help. This can happen in the dating process or only come to light after the relationship has become more long-term and permanent. Regardless of when it happens, what has formed is a helper and patient relationship. One partner holds space and supplies everything necessary for the other person. It's seen as helping, at least in the short and even medium term, but eventually it becomes clear no matter how much is done, how many resources used, how many opportunities are afforded, nothing is going to change. Unfortunately, there's no incentive to change, really, because one partner is doing all the hard work. What can be devastating to realize is many people, no matter what they say or even mean in the moment, do not want to heal. Their issues, problems, and brokenness are something which works for them in some way. Is become their identity or is a role they agreed to portray in this lifetime or is a lesson they're refusing to learn or one which is eluding them as they're not being required to make effort in this direction. It can be difficult to recognize this pattern when part of a healthy relationship includes helping our partner. We all have strengths and weaknesses, things which we excel at and others where we're hopelessly inept. Relating is in part providing our strength where another struggles, supporting them and being supported in return. This then is the key to recognizing healthy relating from the helper and patient dynamic. The connection between a helper and a patient is by its very nature unequal. This is why we have standards of ethical behavior for lawyers, teachers, doctors, therapists, and so on. Those who help are automatically elevated to the status of authority. They hold space not only for themselves, but for those who need help, and those in need are by their very nature unable to support or defend themselves. A relationship between a helper and a patient is inherently unequal. It can create an unhealthy dynamic of one partner, consciously or unconsciously, patronizing the other by pointing out areas of weakness or need and then offering wisdom and remedy for the core issues. It can create a power imbalance where the person in need passively or overtly controls the helper by constantly demanding help or asserting their need for help as an excuse for not taking responsibility in relating. It sets up a dynamic where only one person is responsible for the health and well-being of both, which eventually kills whatever desire originally existed for the relationship in the first place. Often this is described as loving the person while the relationship itself is hollow. The black hole of need and helping consumes any possibility of relating. Changing this dynamic requires the helper to stop helping. This seems simple and obvious, yet can be very complicated to implement because it requires the helper to separate out their need to help from their core identity. Most helpers know all too well they struggle to keep from helping in the face of perceived need. Whether or not a person has expressed their need for help, the helper can feel the need and has learned to supply it. This has become who, not just what, they are. Like ivy climbing the side of a building, the tendrils drill inwards, eventually taking over support of the structure, and it can feel as if unwinding them might tear the entire wall down. What can help is to realize helping sometimes is the worst thing that can be done for a person. Muscle can't be built if we don't exercise. No one can stand on their own without effort and perseverance. For helpers, it can be handy to remember how a child learns to walk. No parent can do this for them. It can't be gifted like a toy. It is achieved through effort, attempts, and many, many failures. If the point of helping is for the patient to stand on their own, to take over and do things themselves, then tapering off or ending the help is exactly what is best for them. Being there to dust them off as they gain muscle is perhaps one of the most loving things we can do for them. Healthy, intimate partners are equals. They aren't necessarily healed, and while they may have their shit together, this points to the fact they still have shit they have to deal with. Intimate partners relate to each other. They consciously choose to do this, although this comes and goes depending on the day and the moment. They communicate both verbally and physically, and most of the time their words and actions match up. They make mistakes. They own them, eventually. They enjoy each other's company, ask for what they want, and enjoy being with each other again, depending on the day. What's key to this process is relating to each other. Even though neither partner has their thumbs on the scale, the two sides don't stand still. They adjust first this one and then that one, always in movement, but in the moving, they create a healthy equilibrium. This doesn't require the partners to be in full agreement, experience joy in every moment, or be joined at the hip. Life is too rich and people too complex for such a thing. It's in the relating, the joining of two transformational beings in the process of becoming, that magic comes into being and what is an improbability becomes possible. The relationship with a partner is one of the strongest, most challenging, most fulfilling any of us can have in embodied life. We're taught a great many fictions about how one goes about finding a partner or being available for them to find you, most of which ask us to depend on luck, karma, forces outside our control, or on patterns and systems of behavior which will do the trick. The effect of this is to hide us from our ability to actively and spiritually participate in this most practical of manifestation projects. All the lists of requirements, right thoughts, intentions, and programming we're taught as means of manifestation are necessary parts of the process, but like the heart chakra, reside above the zone of practical implementation. In other words, once you've figured out what it is you want, you then need to take steps to implement it. One of the most powerful ways to manifest a partner, once you've defined what you want, focused your mind on making this a reality, and set your intentions, is to begin working directly with your second chakra, or Yazad. To do this, first get into a meditative state, either lying down or preferably seated. If you're in a chair, make sure your feet are flat on the floor. Focus your attention on your third chakra, your center, which is just above your belly button and below your ribcage. Allow yourself to feel the warm glow, the happiness, which is your transcendent self, that feeling of home where everything is all right. Then move your attention down to your second chakra, the Sefirot Yesod, which is between your hip bones. Hold this feeling of your transcendent self as it begins to adjust and transform into physical and emotional feelings to become embodied. Next, focus your attention on how you have changed. From being a radiant glow of light, you can see that your energy in your sacral chakra is a loop. The golden glow becomes a ribbon of flowing gold coming into you at the center point between your hip bones, moving around the inner left side, across the back, around the inner right side, and back out through the center. You are one half of an infinity symbol. Completely yourself, whole and healthy, and yet there can be more. As you watch, you feel your boundaries stretch in front of you, as if a wall of fog were shredding and fading. You remain in your center, the energy ribbon flowing through you, yet you begin to see beyond yourself to where the energy comes from and goes to. Focusing your attention on the ribbon, you can perceive that as it moves through you, it is picking up your intentions, your desires, your needs, requirements, and thoughts. It's communicating these out into the world. You can feel that as the energy comes into you, it carries the intentions, desires, needs, requirements, and thoughts of another. When you're ready, begin to activate this energy, strengthening it, sending encouragement through it, calling to the one who matches who you are and what you need. When you feel a positive response, know your message has been received. Things have been set in motion. Return your consciousness to your core self, feeling the same and yet more than you once were. Allow your attention to return to your body, to the room, and to the moment. While some would call this a meditation, it's in actuality a ceremony or act of manifestation. This process can be done more than once. In fact, the process of manifestation improves with repetition. Trust your awareness of yourself, the intuition and information you receive. Real life changes usually occur within hours or days, although not necessarily the way we expect them to. And as always, when working to manifest a partner, it's important to specify they be humans. So often, people attempt to manifest the perfect partner for themselves and become inundated with pets because their criteria for being loved, accepted, and supported is more easily and readily fulfilled through a four-legged companion, or two, or 12. Manifesting a partner comes from our ability to intimately connect, to form Akasha into a living presence which makes us more than the sum of our parts. But it also requires us to balance all three connective centers of our being. Without our heart center, we become self-absorbed, selfish, using others to get our own needs met without consideration or concern. Without our intimate center, we cannot truly see ourselves or the other, nor honor our uniqueness as it expresses into the world. Only when we use both equally in balance, like a team of horses pulling together, do we achieve our full potential as spiritual beings living an embodied experience. And that's all the time we have this week. If you're interested in knowing more, check out my website, akashicreading.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please consider supporting it by subscribing on Patreon. You can join in patron-only classes, see all my other offerings, and get regular updates about what I'm working on at patreon.com/TerryUchtena. Thanks. Bye.